Thursday, May 15, 1980, Venice, Florida. To Jean, Bob, George and Jack, Fred, Jean, Marie, and Mary Jane, Fred Jr. and Diane, Bobby and Noreen, Barbara and Dave, Bobby D. and Nancy, Ellen, Bobby and Bruce, Beth Ann, and John Jr., not forgetting the three wee ones that Mother and I are so proud of, Michael, Mindy, and Brian. And also, that by the time you hear this tape, Mother and I hope there will be further welcome additions to our wonderful family that we started in Glasgow, Scotland, in 1922. 58 years ago. I have long been thinking of writing this autobiography for many years to give all of you some of your family background, especially since moving down here to Venice, Florida in 1977 from our old home at 38 Gordon Avenue, North Tarrytown, New York, USA. And now that Mother and I are getting along in years, and both of us not in the best of health, I thought I would get going on it before time ran out on me. Mother and I are so proud of all of you. In the years you were growing up in North Tarrytown, and your individual happy marriages, and your personal accomplishments in your lives as you grew up, then went on your own ways through life, and especially the 10 wonderful grandchildren you gave us, and all of whom have been a great joy to both of us as we followed your progress through a life of your own. So all we can say is thanks to all of you for the fulfillment of happy years you gave to Mother and I. As I go through this story of mine, there will be many times, I'm sure, when certain incidents about you all arise and come back to me, and I will comment on them in many ways. First of all, I will try and fill you in on my own personal life and family since I first arrived in this world at 35 Kerr Street, Glasgow, Scotland, on March 26, 1899, over 81 years ago. But first of all, I have only my memories and recollections of most of these times, and their sequences may not be in order all the time. I have very few notes to consult, so if I break off on one subject to another, bear with me. On March 26, 1899, I was born luckily into a very happy family. Mother, father, the oldest of the family, Archie, about 10 years old, my oldest sister Jenny, about 8.5 to 9 years old, and the youngest at that time, a brother John, about 2 to 2.5 years old, so I was the fourth child and the third son, born to Lilius McCall Barr and Archibald Barr in 1899. I guess I was a happy baby. At least I never heard any remarks from anyone that I can recall. At least they had to put up with me, good or bad. I don't know any details of these first years, except the one time when John was 5 and he had to start school. I was about 3 years, maybe. My mother took me with her to enroll John into school, and while she was busy giving the details about him to a teacher or somebody else, I don't know, I wandered out of the room and down a long corridor with about 6 doors to classrooms on either side. And when I decided to go back to my mother, I couldn't find the room she was in, and all the doors were closed, and I couldn't reach the knobs. So I just let out a loud yell, which developed into an uproar, and all the classroom doors were thrown open almost at once by the various teachers. So with the help of most of the faculty, my problem was solved, and I was reunited with my very much embarrassed mother, and I was lectured all the way in with a very hot tongue. Later that evening, when mother told of my getting lost in school, we all had a great laugh, and of course I was the hero about it, and I was happy to have been the cause of it all. That was in Oak Bank School, just a block and a half from our house. My early years were uneventful, just a few misdemeanors now and again, and then about two more years after my sister Lily was born, and about 2 years after that came Margaret. Then again, after a lull of about 2.5 years, another sister, Anne, was born. Then another 2 years later, the last of the family, a boy, Hugh, was born, making a total of 8 children, 4 boys and 4 girls, and that was that. Of course, in these years, large families were pretty common, at least I thought so, and I can well remember the names of them around us, the Allisons, Greggs, Drummonds, Nelsons, Frasers, McLeans, etc. Most of my brother's friends were bigger brothers of my friends, and the same with the Gills. Kerr Street was a nice area of red sandstone tenements or apartments, with our neighbours mostly sober, steady, working people, mostly tradesmen, carpenters, engineers, shipyard and steel mill men, bricklayers, masons, etc., an enormous even number of Catholic and Protestant families, which didn't seem to make any distinction among them to us, all of us. But somehow we never thought of it, no Italians, Polish or Jewish families, with an odd English family in the area, to my recollection. I was a pretty good student in my school years. Among my better subjects were drawing and painting, history and English. I was always interested in foreign places and was often chosen to answer certain questions when the school examiners made their rounds of the various classes. I was a prolific reader in my days, as were all of us bars, including my mother and father. And in our house we had a large bookcase full of books of most of the early writers and poets. Books of Dickens, Shakespeare, Sir Walter Scott, and many others of well-known authors, including Dumas, a great French author, and of course various books on Scotland and her history. I well remember my last teacher at Oak Bank School, Mr. Hamilton, a man I always looked back on with great respect for his many talents and interest in his pupils. This is a time of year, time when we were studying. This was a time when we were studying a certain subject with big books in front of us. I knew the subject pretty well, and I lost interest, and as I had a little paperback boy's book in my pocket, I took it out, placed it in front of the big book, and was enjoying the story of the three characters' adventures in Africa, Jack, Sam, and Pete. Mr. Hammond decided to ask me a question at this time, and I was engrossed in my three heroes in Africa. I didn't hear him as he came up behind my desk and saw the other book, and that was that. I was taken out in front of the class, placed my hand on the desktop. He took a leather strap out of his pocket, which was cut into 3 1-inch straps halfway up, and I got 3 good hard licks on my palm, which, believe me, brought tears to my eyes. Took my boy's book from me, tore it into shreds, and threw it in the waste basket with the stern admonition, if I did it again, I would get double the strokes. I can assure you, I had a red, burning right hand when I got home, and I had to hide it from my parents, as I would have been doubly punished. by my parents. For such misbehaviour and bad conduct in a school in these days, the teacher was always right. And thinking back on it through the years, I never thought to have been unjustly punished, but always and was confident that after that. This incident established a real friendly relationship between Mr. Hamilton and I for many years after. After class that day, he called me back and said, "I am surprised that you read trash like that, Bar. And I know by your work in English that you must be interested in good books." Gave me carfare for the morning and told me to go up to his home, and his wife would give me a package of his own personal books to bring in class that morning, which I did. He told me to look through them all, take my choice of any three, take them home, read them, then bring back and choose three more, which I did regularly till I left that school, Oakbank School. Just a small local school, which I never forget. It was just a square block, but always big to me in my memories. I call it my alma mater. I left Oakbank School aged 12 and a half years, as I had gone as far as possible there, and made it with 6 months to spare. Then I was transferred with others like myself to Springbank Supplementary School with higher subjects there. I stayed till I was 14, a year and a half later in 1913. This was a far different school from Oakbank, but I soon got into stride there. We had a little French, a little mathematics, higher English classes, geometry and trigonometry, public speaking, and self-expression on subjects of our own choosing, all in a full-time course. I'm sure comparing it to the States here, I don't think I would have had any trouble entering college, but the last circumstances financially didn't allow for that. So I had to find a job and earn my keep at least. So these are my early school days, cut off at age 14. Even if I'd found the opportunity to go to college, one had to be an Einstein or a Rockefeller to get a chance. Of course, this was what we all grew up to expect, and we didn't feel neglected. The usual thing to do after leaving school at 14 was find a job in a store, office, or warehouse, running messages, till one was 16, when the way was open to us to learn a trade, which most of my friends and contemporaries did. I chose to be an engineer, with the prospects of becoming a marine engineer after 21 and going to sea as fourth-class engineer, with, of course, the ambition to finally becoming a marine chief engineer and sailing the seven seas. At least it was a dream for a while. By the way, the standard starting wages for a first-year apprentice in most trades was 6 shillings per week. That was about a dollar and a half, probably, with a yearly increase until 5 years had been served, amounted to about 21 shillings and sixpence, about $4 in these days. Tradition and laws also were that when an apprentice in almost all trades could not draw the full wages of a journeyman in the same company he served his full 5 years, he had to leave his old company and go look for a job in another company where he was paid the full scale as a tradesman. That's the reason why he was called a journeyman. He had worked his other places was entitled to the full prevailing scale of about $20-$25 a week. So it was all somewhat of a sacrifice on the parents' part to let their son start as an apprentice, as his 6 shillings was about equal to about $1.50, as I said, and most of us at that time and age had big appetites and also needed clothes, which parents had to provide, plus spending money. In May 1914, our parents moved to a larger house at 20 North Park Street, Queen's Cross, Glasgow, only about 10 minutes away from Kerr Street. So most of us continued going back to spend our spare time with old chums in Kersey. We all settled down in our new home till August the 4th, 1914, got World War I into our lives, and the old ways were gone forever. Archie, my oldest brother, was a member of the Territorials, a civilian reserve army like the U.S. National Guard, and was immediately called to active duty with the regular army for the duration of the war, and left North Parsi for his camp in Fifeshire, north of Edinburgh. John, the next oldest boy, enlisted in September 1914 with the local Glasgow Regiment, the Scottish Rifles, and as there were no camps or barracks built and not enough units for the new soldiers, they had to sleep home and report at 6 a.m. every morning, 7 days a week, for drill and training, and still wearing their civilian clothes. By late November 1914, he was overseas in France. My sister Jenny's husband, Charlie, enlisted in late 1914.